Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The remedy for boredom has arrived. This is the People's Podcast. Let's go for a ride.
Well, he's got gold chains and hair like a dream. He's definitely the coolest on the whole A-team. There's just one question. Where is he from? Chris Jericho invented Mr. T's mom.
Yeah, did you see the WWE Hall of Fame? If there's one thing we've learned, it's Mr. T loves his mother, and Chris Jericho invented Mr. T's mom. That's right. I came up with that little ditty in lieu of the cowbell just for you. Do you like it? Huh? Do you like it? What a weekend we had this weekend if you're a wrestling fan. And today we're going to discuss all of that. Plus, we got Rey Mysterio back on the show today to finish our conversation. We spoke about so much last week, and we didn't even touch his WCW days or how he finally made the jump to WWE, what the reactions were when he got into the WWE locker room. It's always been known as a big man's company. He was also very close to Eddie Guerrero. We'll talk about his classic matches with Eddie and the relationship they had. And, of course, we'll discuss his future. Ray's suffered a few injuries. How long does he plan to keep it going? We'll get into all that coming up. Plus, we're going to take your calls to discuss all things WrestleMania, Hall of Fame, the Raw after WrestleMania, Undertaker lost, the streak is over, there's a changing of the guard, Cesaro, The Shield, Daniel Bryan, so many names coming up from NXT. We are just bursting with WWE news. It's definitely a wrestling-themed show today. So, we're going to be taking your calls. If you check Talk is Jericho on the Twitter, at Talk is Jericho on the Twitter, at Talk is Jericho on the Twitter, we will post the number. And if you get a chance, call in and let's talk WrestleMania. Nothing is off limits today. But before we get going, I got to have a little heart-to-heart with you guys. And this is very serious. I know you hear me thank my sponsors all the time on this show and read out the ad copy. But what you don't realize is that this costs money to get Talk is Jericho done for you twice a week. We have studio costs and the technology-related costs. You don't have to pay for the bandwidth, the distribution site, all the little expenses that come with it. This is where the sponsors come in. They enable me to take care of those expenses so that you get this podcast for free. But something else you might not know, I actually choose every sponsor on Talk is Jericho. I actually use every sponsor on Talk is Jericho. We mentioned earlier the Dollar Shave Club. I use their razors, stamps.com, GoToMeeting, LegalZoom, DDP Yoga, DraftKings.com. All those things I actually use because A, the things that we actually need. B, I think you'll have some fun with it. And C, I believe in these companies as people. They're good people, and that's important as well. They're products and services that I believe in use. And so what I'm asking of you is to please check out my sponsors. Explore their sites and their services and their products. I'm not even asking you to buy anything. I'm asking you just please check it out and decide for yourselves. I guarantee that if I'm talking about it, it's because I use it and I believe in it and I think the products are great. And trust me, I wouldn't steer you wrong. You guys have been with me for over 23 years. You know when Chris Jericho says something that I mean what I say. And listen, if you do buy something or use a product that sponsors my show, let me know. Send me a tweet at Talk is Jericho or send me a tweet at I am Jericho. I'd love to hear what you think. And so do my sponsors want to hear what you think. And maybe even I'll get you on the show to talk about it. It's something new I'm going to do here. If you tweet that you've used one of my sponsors or have checked out one of my sponsors at Talk is Jericho or at I am Jericho, I will possibly have you on the show to discuss it, okay? That's the new deal I'm going to make with you. So please support this show by supporting my sponsors. I love doing it for you. I want to keep doing it for you twice a week, and you know you're enjoying it. I mean, only here on Talk is Jericho, and there's hundreds of podcasts for you to listen to. Only here can you hear Egypt. Can you hear Gordy Canuck? Can you hear Oates' Mustache? Pinche Ghost? All of the great life-changing comedy that you hear right here on Talk is Jericho. You're getting it free twice a week. So let's talk about WrestleMania for a couple seconds here. Let's talk about how Egypt, by the way, the high school janitor who interrupted the finish of Pummelmania 2 and kind of destroyed the whole concept of the BTWF back in those days, he was on the show last week on part one of Rey Mysterio, and we discussed our WrestleMania predictions. Well, I actually won. I predicted 4 out of 8 possible winners. And Egypt only predicted 2 out of 4 possible winners. But the thing is, Egypt predicted that Brock Lesnar would beat The Undertaker for the streak. And nobody saw that coming. I mean, what an amazing moment. I mean, the match was okay, so-so at best. But then we find out afterwards that Undertaker had a horrible bad concussion and was actually knocked out and didn't remember where he was, didn't remember what city he was in, didn't remember he was in a match. And this is a warrior. I mean, like I said a couple of weeks ago, I saw this guy get burned in the middle of the Elimination Chamber match right beforehand when he got burned by his own pyro back in 2010 and continued the match and worked with me afterwards for about 15 minutes. So I saw this guy and how tough he is. So if any of you guys are bagging on the Undertaker-Brock Lesnar match, remember, Taker was out. And he still finished the match. And you could tell he had no spring in his step. The German suplexes that Brock were giving him, he was barely going up for. So there was a lot of issues going on. Now, as far as the concept of Brock Lesnar breaking the streak, I know a lot of people are very angry. A lot of people are furious. But let me tell you something, brother. I remember back in 1988 when Hulk Hogan lost the world championship to Andre the Giant with the famous evil twin referee set up. You guys remember that? It was Earl Hebner and Dave Hebner, where we find out that he had a twin. And I was devastated that Hulk had lost the title. It'd been 4 years, and it's just the way things were. Hulk would never lose because he's the champion. How could Hulk Hogan lose? Well, he lost the title, and it was time to move on to the next phase of the WWE. It's the same with The Undertaker. I don't like it when guys win their retirement matches. I never liked it. I remember back a few years ago when Trish Stratus won in her retirement match and retired as the champion. I don't like that stuff. I mean, Edge had to retire as the champion, but that's because he couldn't work anymore. He couldn't do anything. I guarantee had he had his way, he wouldn't have won either. It's like when you're ready to move on, I'm not even saying pass the torch, but you got to lose. It's a Japanese style thing where in your last match, you insist on it because that's just the way it should be. And I've seen amazing retirement matches from some of the greatest of all time, especially over in Japan, Tatsumi Fujinami or Antonio Inoki, all these guys, and they lose in their final match as they should because that's how the business is built. And if this really is towards the end of The Undertaker's career, who better to break the streak than Brock Lesnar? Legitimate tough guy, actual credentials of being a badass, UFC champion, NCAA amateur wrestling champion. I mean, this guy's got all the goods. So another thing to think of too is Vince McMahon, the WWE, is paying Lesnar a lot of money. And to me, it seems that he was kind of losing his steam, you know? And had he not beaten The Undertaker, he might have been finished as a legitimate draw. He would be an attraction, but as a legitimate money-making character, he had to beat The Undertaker. So I was shocked. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't one of those people that was predicting, oh, I knew he was going to lose. I would have said there's no way he's going to lose. But when he did, after the shock wore off, I started understanding the reasons for that and enjoying the reasons for that. Now, it really took the wind out of the sails of the people in the Pontiac Silverdome, as Hulk Hogan would say. Actually, in the New Orleans Superdome was where it really was. But the last match delivered as well. The triple threat between Orton and Batista and Daniel Bryan. They brought the crowd back into it. Amazing finish. Bryan taps out Batista and 70,000 people chanting yes. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that as far as a WrestleMania moment. I thought the Triple H Daniel Bryan match was amazing. Triple H still one of the best workers in the business and one of the best of all time. There's no way you can't say that, no matter what kind of opinion you have of him personally or as a politician or as the leader of the locker room or running of the company. He definitely is an amazing worker and put Daniel Bryan over like $1 million, the proverbial $1 million. So I think it was, and also the beginning of the show with Hulk Hogan coming out and then Steve Austin coming out and then The Rock coming out. I've often said that the four legitimate faces of the company over the years have been The Rock, Steve Austin, John Cena, and Hulk Hogan. And now you had three of them in the ring at the same time. And that was a great moment. Nice surprise for Austin and Rock to come out. Amazing way to kick off WrestleMania 30. So overall, and also too, I love the fact that Cesaro won the Battle Royal. I mean, I've been a big fan of Cesaro for years. That's funny. I almost call myself the Nostradamus of predicting wrestling talent. I should be a scout for the WWE because I remember back in 2002, I went to Vince McMahon to convince him to let me put John Cena over in his first pay-per-view match when no one really believed in Cena, but I knew that he had something to make him a star. I did the same thing with Bray Wyatt last year when I went down to NXT. I requested to work with him because I knew he was going to be something special. I kept sending his videos to Vince when he was making them saying, you got to check these out. Cesaro, I requested to work with Cesaro in Tokyo last year and told Vince that he was a great performer as well. So yeah, I got Daniel Bryan had his first match with me in the WWE. His first WWE match when he came back on NXT was with me for the title. So I am the Nostradamus of wrestling. I can predict the future. So Mania, 100% off the charts. I mean, the Hall of Fame was great too. With Jake the Snake Roberts' speech was off the chain. Scott Hall's was good, and then of course you had the typical rambling ones. Mr. T just rambling about his mom. I'm sure his mom was a nice lady, but...
Well, he's got gold chains and hair like a dream. He's definitely the coolest on the whole A-team. There's just one question. Where is he from? Chris Jericho invented Mr. T's mom.
And then, of course, Ultimate Warrior doing a speech that only the Ultimate Warrior can do. It's kind of went in 15 different directions all at once. So... But the big thing for me was the Raw after WrestleMania. Always one of the best Raws of the year because of the crowd is always great. The people are always going nuts. It's such an international crowd and a very smart wrestling crowd. So they were going bananas in there. And then it was you want to talk about a real changing of the guard. I mean, look at all the people that they introduced and put over. You had Paige come out and win the Divas title right off the bat. Bo Dallas is coming in, Adam Rose is coming in, Rusev coming in with Lana, all these people from NXT introduced basically all on the same show. Then Cesaro gets put over, Bray Wyatt, RVD comes back, Barrett goes over, Lesnar gets a big promo, Daniel Bryan gets a big push. So the Shield gets a big push. So you can really see a changing of the guard. It's like the Attitude Era guys are being weeded out few and far between. Am I an Attitude guy? Am I going to be obsolete pretty soon? I don't know. But I just really love the idea of the distinctive, definitive, like this is a whole new era for the WWE. And things look great. I mean, the NXT guys are being brought up the proper way. The guys that have been there kind of stirring around for a bit are starting to really get their chance. So you can see this is a whole new era for the WWE and a whole new world. And as it should be. I mean, we kind of have... I mean, not that Cena and Orton and Batista and those type of guys are just going to go away and get jobbed out or anything like that. Listen to me. I sound like a smart jobbed out. But the point is you're starting to get some new guys out there with some new steam and really kind of focusing on that, which is what you have to do. That's what wrestling's all about. And I know every generation will go, well, my generation was the best, but it doesn't matter whose generation was the best. All that matters is that you bring new talent in. I remember when I was a kid watching the WWE, I would always love... when they would show vignettes for the new guys, I'd always be really excited. You would know who they were before they even came in. And that's one of the reasons why I always believed in having vignettes, whether it was the original countdown clock vignettes or the Save Us vignettes or the End of the World as You Know It vignettes. I always kind of love that air of mystery and kind of getting people's attention before you even get on the show. And that's what they're doing with a lot of those guys. And that's what you have to do. It's kind of the old school style of wrestling. So it's a very good time in the WWE right now. If you're a fan, it's a transition phase, but the future looks so bright. You got to wear the proverbial shades. So I want to know, people, what did you think of WrestleMania? What did you think of the streak being broken? What did you think of the Raw after WrestleMania? Let's talk about the state of the WWE, and we're going to do all that. Go to @TalkIsJericho on the Twitter, find the phone number, and give me a call, and we'll talk about whatever you want. But before that, we got part two of the amazing Rey Mysterio interview. So much stuff to talk about. Rey didn't really play too big of a role in the Battle Royal, but Rey's a legend at this point, and he's another one of the guys that will slowly be phasing down his career as we talk about that, but still always means something, and one of the innovators and pioneers of high flying, and the best high flyer I've personally ever seen, and no one has even come close. He will be up very, very soon. But first, welcome to Talk is Jericho. We got so much to talk about with Rey Mysterio. We couldn't just do it for 1 week. We got him back here again. We were talking about WCW and the time that we had there. Wasn't it interesting how, you know, we were talking about last week about Hall and Nash, about how cool they were and how good they were. I think one of the reasons why they got a bad reputation is the same reason why almost everybody did back in those days. Was WCW was just, it was a real volatile atmosphere. Did you notice that? Like, everybody that was in WCW that then went to WWE afterwards was a lot cooler than they were in WCW?
Yeah, I think WCW was like the big bully. You know, anybody that was that had game and that was making money at the time,
yeah.
You know, they had, if they wanted to bully you, they were going to step over you, either in front of your face or behind your face. Lucky to say that you know, I never had any issues with that, mm-hmm. except for the fact that, you know, I was always held down to a certain extent, but you know, always was kept in the mix. But you're absolutely right, man. I mean, yeah. You are, Chris.
You know, you can see that. There was guys, like, you know, we were talking about Eddie the last week, the match you and Eddie had. That Halloween Havoc, Eddie was one of the most over heels in the company. You were one of the most over baby faces. I was one of the most over heels. I remember Kidman was over huge as a baby face. But we could only get so far up the ladder because there was always, you know, the NWO guys or the Hogans and Lugers and Stings and those guys. We never worked with them. I mean, I worked with them a few times, but there was never any real programs. And it just was a little bit frustrating.
It was. And it wasn't until you made that first step and then everybody come along afterwards.
Yeah,
you know,
when I left,
you kind of came to a dead end, right?
Well, yeah, it was the whole Goldberg feud for me, where they kind of started this mock feud that people ended up wanting to see, and they would never go through with it. Like you said, it was just, you know, Chris Jericho is a cruiserweight TV champion at best, and he could never get any higher up the card. And it was frustrating, and that's when I started looking to go to WWE, even though it was for, you know, for less money and you know, all that sort of thing. But I didn't care at that point. You know, I just had to get out of there and move forward. Now,
right.
were you in WCW when they closed, or had you left by then?
No. I stayed in WCW till the end, man. I remember wanting to leave so bad.
Right.
But hearing that Vince would never take me, that I was just way too small to be part of WWE.
Right.
So it just kind of held me back, and you know, I said, okay, I'll just ride along, man, see what happens.
Describe to us that last day when WWE bought WCW, and it was the last show, I believe it was in Panama City, that cool nightclub, yeah, where they used to put the ring in the middle of the pool. What was that? What was the atmosphere like on that day?
It was shaky. It almost felt like a 7.0 earthquake had hit Panama City the day of.
Yeah.
And everybody was still in shock, man. It was crazy. I mean, being at the time for me that I was still riding out the wave and just trying to figure out where life was going to send me, man. Wasn't really worried at the time of what was going to happen with my future. I knew I still had Mexico,
yeah,
in the back of my, you know, and that I could still go back to it. But a lot of guys were skeptical, man. They didn't know what was going to happen to their career, you know, because they had mentioned that with the purchase of the company, some talent was going to be bought along with it, and some were going to be left out. And nobody knew who that was until they spoke to you directly.
So did they talk to you that day? Is it Shane McMahon showed up or something along those lines? Is that the first person that you saw? Did they have a group meeting or something?
No, they just... We carried along like it was a normal day. Of course, we had the meeting, and they let us know that the company was being bought out.
Mm-hmm.
That's when everybody just kind of started making plans on their own, you know?
Yeah.
But for me, and I forgot, I believe I got a call from somebody from the office saying that WWE wasn't going to buy out my contract, that I was one of the wrestlers that was going to be left out for the time being. So I remember being off since the time they bought WCW
mm-hmm.
until my contract expired, and they were paying me week after week after that. You know,
oh wow!
Not to wrestle.
So you were getting paid to not wrestle.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not a bad deal. So then,
no, not at all.
Yeah, it's a good job you can get it right. So then, how did you end up getting into WWE when they mentioned to you that you wouldn't be picked up? What kind of finally changed their mind? Because I remember on my end, I don't think I've ever told you this, they were asking, there was a couple of people were asking about stuff, and I think it might have even been Stephanie McMahon. Don't quote me on that, but she was like, yeah, we're going to bring in a couple guys. She kept mentioning Vampiro, and I was like, listen, if you're going to bring Vampiro in, I said, you need to bring in Rey Mysterio. And they're like, well, he's small. I said, it doesn't matter. Trust me. Trust me on this. If you're thinking about bringing Vampiro or Conan or these guys, fine, bring him in, but you need to bring in Mysterio for sure. And I remember Benoit was saying the same, and Dean was saying the same, and Eddie was saying the same. Yeah. All the guys, obviously, you know. So how did you finally get that call?
Well, I got the call from JR saying that they were interested in bringing me in,
mm-hmm.
but they wanted to let my contract from WCW expire.
Right.
Until that happened, that we would be able to sit down and negotiate. So that was pretty much maybe a month or so after the company closed down,
mm-hmm.
and my contract didn't expire until the following year. So, you know, you keep in mind that I was getting paid for about 6-7 months.
Right.
But again, once that time came around that corner, I was like, man, I wonder if I'm ever going to get that call from WWE.
Yeah.
You know, it just felt like it was eternal and almost impossible. And sure enough, you know, JR called me up. We met up in L.A. We sat down. We talked business. Next thing you know, I was part of the company, man.
And there's a couple changes because when you had lost your mask in WCW and were working without it at that point in time. And then when you came back to WWE, you had the mask on. Was that Vince saying, listen, we want you with the mask, the whole nine yards?
Well, here's the crazy thing. When I was signed, they wanted me to go to OVW.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So I was up there for 2 weeks, man. Just to kind of, and you know what? It's kind of, it was a good thing that I went up there, man, because the ring in WWE was
right.
way different from the one in WCW.
Let's talk about that. That's an interesting point, Oscar. In what way was it different?
It was bigger, man. It was bigger in width,
mm-hmm.
and the ropes were much taller, and they weren't. They were actual ropes.
Ropes, yeah. And WCW was cables.
Yeah, cables, exactly. Even in Mexico, pretty much every ring that I had wrestled in before was all cables. It was very rare that I'd get a ring that had real ropes.
So how did that affect your you know, your springboards and all that sort of thing?
Well, they kind of adapted to my in-ring work.
Mm-hmm.
They were tightening up the ropes more and more every time I would wrestle.
Oh, they would tighten up the ropes for you? The ring crew would tighten up the ropes? Okay.
Yeah, so they made it a bit easier for me. But still... man, the WWE ropes were probably chin high to me,
mm-hmm.
when the other ones were probably chest high.
Wow. That's interesting. You would never think about that. That must have been a little, like you said, you needed that time to make that adjustment.
And you know what else, Chris, was really hard for me to adjust? Is every time I would get shoot from turnbuckle to turnbuckle,
mm-hmm.
I would easily take 3 to 4 steps more to hit that buckle. So my timing was off at first, man.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
So those two, so that time in OVW helped you kind of to get used to it?
Yeah, it helped me adapt to the WWE ring. Yeah, exactly.
Another one, too, is, you know, and this is, I'm sure you know the reason for this, but you were always Rey Mysterio Jr., and then when you came to WWE, the Jr. was dropped. And
yeah,
that's,
exactly.
Do you know the reason for that?
I believe one of their reasons was the fact that I'm carrying the tradition from my uncle, but, you know, he's not part of the company, so we'll just keep you with the Rey Mysterio.
Here's another reason. If you notice, Chavo Guerrero Jr., Jr. was dropped. Ted DiBiase Jr., Jr. was dropped. It's because Vince is a junior. He's Vince McMahon Jr., and he hates being called Jr.
Really?
Yes. So that's I've never actually been told this for sure, but I've heard, and that's why he doesn't like the name Jr. for anybody. Because he is a junior.
I got to make sure I ask him next time I see him, man.
Ask him. Cause,
boss, why did you drop my junior, man?
Ask him, yeah, because I know, remember I used to call people junior as an insult? He used to love that.
Yeah.
Like, what an insult, junior. Because I think he hates it. So, once again, here you are. You come into the WWE, and now, obviously, the whole crew knows who you are. But I always say that Vince McMahon, even he might know, but he doesn't really know anything about anybody until they perform in his ring. I'm sure Vince was nothing but nice to you when you first got there. How was it the first couple times you worked? Did you have to, was there an adjustment to learn the quote-unquote WWE style?
Yeah, most definitely. You know who had a big part in my
learning
appearance and intro and all that? Dean had a lot to do with it, man, which I'm really thankful for that. I guess he had come up with the idea of the pop-up stage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that entrance till the day has been one of the best entrances I've had, you know,
it's amazing.
My career.
Do you think that might have had something to do with a little bit of wear and tear on your knees? Because you're getting popped up, and then you're landing on the stage, right? Like, how does that work? Does it like, shoot you up in the air, or do you have to jump with it?
You're in a platform.
Yeah.
Probably 5x3,
mm-hmm.
maybe. And you have, like, a little lever that has a wire attached to it.
Yeah.
So when you pull that, you get a countdown, of course. You're underneath the stage. There's a pyro guy to my right or in front of me. In this case, it was Kusama sometimes.
Yeah.
He would count down, and then I would just pull that little lever, which would trigger the weights to go down and pop me up.
Oh, okay.
Which was actually pretty cool, man. It was really, really cool. And then, of course, along came the pyro and all that. But timing it perfectly, after one or two tries, you would get it down,
mm-hmm.
but it would launch you up maybe a good 5-7 feet up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, it looks amazing. Like you said, what a way to come into the company.
Man, it was awesome. That whole buildup of me coming into the company for the first time, I mean, I remember sitting back at home watching the
vignettes.
Videos,
the
vignettes, and after all the accomplishments, you know, I remember sitting back in my couch and just marking out for myself, not in a good way, saying, wow, this is really cool, man. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this. This is it, man. I mean, I've obviously, here's the end to where I never thought or never imagined I would make it to.
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, the WWE has always been a big man's company. I mean, Vince's dad was into the big man. Obviously, Vince is into the big man. And the fact that you got into the WWE, like you said, at all, was a huge testament to you. And like you said, being in the WWE is just a certain, there's something about it like nothing. When you get to that company, you become a star. Not that you weren't before, but it's a whole different level.
Exactly. It's a whole different level. It's big time recognition at this point, man. It just doesn't get any better than this.
Yeah, I mean, and not just for a guy your size, but also for your raza. I mean, I'm sure you became the hero to Latinos worldwide by being in the biggest wrestling company in the world, even more than you ever were.
A lot of the guys that I run into on the streets now or at stores, etc., these are the guys that, along with me, grew up watching the Tito Santanas, you know, the Ricky the Dragons, the Pedro Moraleses, and for them to see me and for me to be part of this company now,
it's
awesome, man. It's really awesome.
But and then when you came in too, you had an amazing group of guys to work with. I mean, I think there was the SmackDown Six was kind of the nickname for you guys, with Chavo and Angle and Eddie and Benoit and Edge. And you guys just came in and had some of the best matches, whether it was six men or different combinations of you guys. That was a great place for you to be in right from the start.
Again, I got caught up with a good group of wrestlers that just wanted to go all out every time. We're very creative, you know, and just wanted to put on a good show. Actually, I'm very blessed to be a part of that circle, or was at the time, you know, just guys that wanted to go all out, and there was no limitation to what you can do. It was not like in Mexico, just one guy looking out for himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was everybody putting a match together and make sure that we stole the night.
Yeah, and you did, you know, time and time again.
Talk is Jericho.
Welcome back to Talk is Jericho. Got one of my best buds from the business on the line. Rey Mysterio is here. Rey, let's talk about, you know, we were both very close to Eddie, one of our best friends, and such an influence as a person and as a performer. How was it for you the day that he passed away? I mean, how hard was it to have to continue performing that night and for the time afterwards, weeks and months afterwards even?
It was really hard, Chris. I had the blessing to be in the ring with him, or to do one of the last programs with him. Because I remember we had just finished WrestleMania 21, I believe it was, in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's where we had finished our feud, and I believe he was getting ready to feud with Batista at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was able to soak in everything from his behalf, but to realize that Saturday afternoon, which was the day that he flew along with from Phoenix to Minneapolis,
mm-hmm.
was the same day that I was supposed to catch my flight from San Diego to Phoenix, Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I stayed behind, and I had some family time. I remember we were at my mother's house in Tijuana. Being that I was with my mom that day, Chris, this is crazy, man, what I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
My mom knew that I've always been a big fan for crosses.
Uh-huh.
And I love crosses. So she, that day before I left, she goes, "Oh, look what I got you." And she had like a little black little pouch, and she pulled out a cross. She goes, "I got you this cross." She goes, it has some saying in the back. She doesn't read English, so
yeah.
So I read it for her. I said, "Oh, this cross is for someone to have a better death."
Hmm.
And I was like, "Oh, you know," at the time, I was like, "Ah, cool, you know, a beautiful cross."
Yeah.
Super pretty big, maybe a finger's length. That's how big the cross was. So I put it back in the pouch. I remember jumping on a red eye that night, Saturday mm-hmm. night, and arriving to Minneapolis like at 6 a.m. By the time I got to the arena, which was about 7:30-ish, almost 8, mm-hmm. in a cab, as soon as I pull out of the cab, one of the bus drivers is there. And, of course, he gave me the news that Eddie had just passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, "No, you got to be kidding me, man. This ain't happening." And, you know, then everything happened after that. Of course, I wanted to go to the hotel, which was a couple blocks down the street. And I did, and you weren't there, I remember.
No, right? Yeah, I was off at that time.
Yeah, you're right.
I
remember seeing Chris there,
uh-huh.
Dean and Chavito, and at the time, our company doctor, which was Dr. Rios.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody was devastated, for sure, you know? Because like I said, Eddie was such an integral part of my career. And yours as well. I mean, you guys had so many great matches. You mentioned the angle that you guys had that was just so good on a personal level, from a storyline level. Was it hard for you to work the weeks and months afterwards, going back to the same buildings where you used to see Eddie, or did you just kind of have to just move on?
It was really hard, especially because they wanted me to to carry the whole theme, the whole tradition of Eddie with me for a while. So it just made it even harder, you know. Especially after every match, it was almost like the fans were, we were combining our pains together.
Yeah.
And we were just, we would just celebrate every night after a match, you know, with a little tribute to Eddie. I remember going into the locker rooms every night after he passed, and I would do a little setup, man. Like if Eddie was there, I would put an Eddie t-shirt, the wristbands, and that was just Eddie's spot, you know.
Yeah.
For a good while, you know, and everybody paid tribute and respect to that.
Because it was hard, too, because weren't they doing the angle after they're having Orton, like, kind of use Eddie's name to kind of get, I believe it was to get your feud more heat. That must have been kind of weird, too.
Yeah, and I remember Randy talking to me about that, and he was like, man, this feels kind of awkward, Ray. I don't know. You know, he was kind of skeptical about doing that angle. But again, I guess everything was within the limits, and... you know, if anybody that knew Eddie, if there was anything that had to involve wrestling and it was for the best of it,
yeah,
you know, he was all out for it.
Well, yeah, because they were getting pretty heavy. Like, so, you know, Eddie's watching from the grave or whatever it was they were saying. It was pretty stiff, but, you know, Eddie obviously knew the business, and it almost was like in his absence, you became the... you know, like you mentioned, you kind of continued on in tribute to him and even went on all the way to winning the world championship at WrestleMania, kind of in his honor. I mean, and Oscar, we've talked about this whole show and last week about how, you know, your size and the fact you got into the WWE. But the fact you won the world title, that Vince McMahon signed off on that's one of the most incredible things and incredible testaments to your abilities and your connection with the crowds and the fans. Tell us about how you were told that you were going to be the champion.
It came straight from him, from the man himself. you know, just the rumor was flown around that at Mania I was going to get the opportunity to work for the title.
Yeah.
Didn't know who the opponents were at the time, but sure enough, after I won the Rumble, that pay-per-view afterwards, which was, I believe, Hell in a Cell.
Yes.
I was stripped away from the match, and that's kind of when I said, yeah, they're not going to go with it. And then, sure enough, man, Vince pulled me in, and he told me that they were going to run with me. So I was like, man, I'm as ready as can be. I couldn't be any readier. I said, I'm good to go. I was really happy and thankful for the opportunity, man. I mean, again... You know, you mentioned that this is a big man sport, and the fact that I had made it this far, you know, with my size, it's just been incredible. So, on top of that, to be able to carry the world title, I mean, it was just awesome.
Yeah, that must have been quite a feeling to win the world title at the biggest show of the year. You know, that was very impressive. I remember I was off at that point, and I called you or text you or whatever. I was just so proud of you.
Yeah, you did.
You know, you were kind of like the flag bearer for all quote unquote little guys in wrestling, even though you're built like a brick house. But still, you know, it was a real kind of a cool moment, and it's something that all of us would be proud of, you know, from our gang back in the day with Eddie and Chris and you know, everybody that kind of is not with us anymore. It was a real cool moment on behalf of all of us, you know.
It's definitely something that at some point in our careers, in our lives, we talked about, you know, and didn't feel impossible, but maybe it was, but that we worked so damn hard every night without even realizing that someday it was going to come to us, man. And to be honest with you, Chris, I don't know if this would have been my career if Eddie hadn't been gone, you know?
Yeah.
Was I ever going to get the title? You know, it's hard to say, but the fact that I did get it, if I could trade everything to have Eddie back, man, I definitely would.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you, man. I hear you. And once again, you know, the show must go on and things happen. And, you know, you were the guy they chose and it was worth it. You know, it was, you were definitely worthy of the spot. And I always took great pride in the fact that, you know, and nothing against anybody in WCW or the boss or whatever, but when we were in WCW, we were a certain size at a certain level. And here, you know, right. Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, Rey Mysterio, and Chris Jericho all go to the WWE and become world champions. That to me, I always took great pride in that fact. You know, we knew we were right when we were in WCW and everyone was talking whatever they were talking. We knew that we were better than that. We proved it.
Right. That you're damn true, man.
Yeah.
That is crazy. That's crazy.
That's one of the reasons why I wanted to work with you back in 2009. I pitched the whole feud to Vince. I think I probably told you this, but I just finished writing a book, my third book, and our angle is a big part of it. And just going back and remembering all the little details and watching the matches. I mean, I knew you and I could tear it up, and we had worked a little bit, but we'd never really worked a program. And
yeah,
that was one of my favorite programs I've ever worked in my entire career.
I think, and you know what, Chris, at that point in our careers, man, we had pretty much, like you said, we had a similarity of careers growing up.
Yeah.
At that point, we had been through it all, man. There was no reason why we couldn't go out there and tear up the mats, man. And that's what we did. And I had a great time. And you're right, that was actually the first time that we were able to work the program together.
Yeah, and I knew that because we had a lot of tricks, like, at that point in time, especially with Eddie gone and Chavo was gone and all those, you know, Chris was gone and Dean wasn't working anymore. The little tricks of what we had learned over the years, like just messing with the mask. I remember, you know, like go to pull your mask off for a split second or you know, throw you against the turnbuckle and you have it in your mouth and it would fall off and you'd pull it back on. We based it around your mask. And when I went to Vince to pitch it to him, he wasn't too into it. He's like, oh, it's the mask and what does it matter? But the thing that I got him with was that he goes, why would you want his mask? And I said, because I'm a bully and I take it because I want it, just like I'm taking his milk money. And when I said that, he was like, all right, let's do it.
Great pitch, huh?
Yeah.
That,
it was really fun to do all the different reversals and it went on for 4 or 5 months. But do you remember when we pitched the finish where you would do the 619 and I pulled your mask off?
Yes. And I remember saying, of course we can do it. We can pull it off.
Yes. And they the powers that be didn't think we could. And I remember we pitched the finish to Ricky Steamboat. And he was like, well, I don't know about that. And I'm not sure. And it's not what they want. I'm like, they don't know what they want. You know, we know what this finish is. So Ricky went and pitched it and came back and said that, you know, Vince says you can't do it. And I was talking to him, it's like, you know, Oscar, we know we can do this. And we went into the ring, we practiced it, remember?
You're right. Yep.
We practiced it. So
I remember I had to get another mask underneath.
Yes.
Because I believe we did it twice, back to back.
Yes.
One, we pulled it off, and then when you were going to do it the second time, I had a mask underneath, remember?
Yes. And also remember,
we were like,
the first time you had to get a special mask that had like, almost like mesh on the back of it. There's a lot of open holes that I could put my fingers in to pull it off.
Yes.
So I remember I asked the week before, do you have, like, can we do this? And you're like, yeah, of course we can do it. I even have the right mask for it. So you brought it that week, and I went to see Vince after Steamboat said you can't do it. And I went to Vince and I said, Vince, are you saying we can't do it like you don't want us to do it? Are you saying we can't do it because it's not physically possible? And he said, it's not physically possible. You won't be able to do it. And I'm like, come with me right now. And he's like, well, I got stuff. And I'm like, no, come with me right now. So he came in the ring and I was like, Oscar, come here. Come over here. And you came around with the 619. And as you swung your legs around, I plucked your mask off and moved out of the way.
Came up. Yeah.
And Vince was looking at us. He's like, do that again. And I was like, it's. I said, it wasn't sleight of hand, Vince. It wasn't like David Copperfield stuff. He goes, do it again. And we did it again perfectly. And he was like, that's your finish right there. Grand slam. Done. And he walked away.
There we go. I remember that. That's good. That's good memory. That was in 2009?
Yeah, 2009, man. Five years ago, believe it or not. And we worked for probably 2 or 3 months. And every match we had seemed to get better than the last. You know, it was real good chemistry.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, so it was always a blast to get in there with you and muck it out and work it out. So, and this, so you just had the knee surgery. You're back again. How long do you think you can go, Oscar, and still be Rey Mysterio? Do you feel good enough to go for a few more years?
I think if I time it correctly and I don't go back to the same schedule that we had back when Eddie and Chris and everybody was around, you know, working 4 or 5 days a week, which,
right,
you know, it takes a toll on your body, man.
Mm-hmm.
I can probably go another 3 years. You know, I'm 39, Chris.
Yeah.
So it's good to say that you can start slowing down at 42.
Right.
And 42 is still a young age. But the style that I've carried with me for almost a quarter of a century is actually a blessing to be able to say that I can still go.
Yeah, and you've been really smart, too. Like, you still have, like, the greatest hits of Rey Mysterio that you do that wows the crowd. You know, it's not like you're out there just, you know, you couldn't get away without doing a Hurricanrana or doing some kind of a springboard or doing some kind of a dive. But you've really kind of focused and picked the right moves that work best for you and are almost like the most low impact. Did you do that on purpose and pick this one and I can do this one, but forget about that one and that one?
I think it was me subconsciously adapting to the ability of my new surgical knee, not being able to bend it all the way,
mm-hmm,
where my heel can touch my ass, and not being able to extend it all the way. And this full extension just happened after the last surgery. But with my limits and all, you know, and even as hard as it sounds, not being able to springboard, which was one of my top moves,
mm-hmm,
because with me being able to springboard, I can, you know, just pretty much do anything I wanted to off of that. Limiting myself off of that and now having to climb to the turnbuckles and doing everything, that makes me feel kind of slow. But on top of that, man, like you said, I've been able to adapt and just do moves with my ability of working around my hurt knee.
So you, there's no more springboarding. You can't, because you can't bend your knees, right?
I can't bend my knee enough to be able to squat and
gotcha,
get on top of the top rope.
Gotcha. I was laughing. I used to talk about your knee braces that you wear under those long pants. It's almost like diving into a shallow lake where the big rocks are underneath it. It's like you think it's a nice dive and the water's going to be cool and you hit that rock. That's what it's like with those pants of yours and those braces, man.
Goddamn. I don't know how many people I busted open with that brace.
Well, once you know it's there, it's okay. But you just got to remember, yeah, braces here. Watch out for the brace. Oscar, out of all your years, and I know it's hard to whittle it down, tell me about your favorite match or a couple of your favorite matches that you can remember from your career, if you had to pick one or two.
God, I would have to say that Jacob with Psychosis, man. My very first entry to Japan was definitely one of my all-time favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember very vividly the match I had with Kurt Angle here, my very first SummerSlam pay-per-view, which was in Nassau Coliseum. That was one of my favorites, too.
Yeah, he was a great performer, too, right?
Man, he was awesome. He was awesome, man. Never really had a chance to hang out with him, but just work-wise, it was just incredible, man. For somebody that as big as he is and just the way he moved and he just flowed so perfect in the ring, man.
He was a natural, for sure, for sure. Who do you see in the WWE now that you think is going to be one of the kind of the keystones for the future in the company? I mean, you've been there for a long time, over 10 years, and there's been a lot of guys come and a lot of guys go, and we're kind of in a transition period in the WWE right now. Who's impressing you from some of the newer guys that you're seeing?
God, I see a lot of the guys now, like right now, from the time I came back, which has been November,
mm-hmm,
up until now, so the last 3 months. See, we grew up different, Chris. We grew out without having a character behind us.
Right.
So it was more based on wrestling,
yes,
and not character. And what I see right now, a lot of character, and haven't been able to see a lot of work. So, but I've been in the ring, man, with the Shield. Actually, Seth Rollins,
yeah,
is probably one of the guys to look out for, man. He's He's bad. And I was able to check him out on this last pay-per-view that they had against the Wyatt family.
Yes.
Which was the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view.
Right.
Man, he was able to express a bit of his emotion in the ring as a singles competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually came up to him. I was like, man, you're looking good out there. So I think he's one of the guys to look out for. You know, I really would love to see, and he hasn't gotten the opportunity yet, is Tyson.
Tyson Kidd, yeah, TJ Wilson. Yeah, he is a very, very, probably the most underrated worker in the company right now.
I'm really looking forward for him to getting the opportunity to be able to see him work, and hey, if I have the opportunity to be in the ring with him too, man, to do some tag team work as well.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think about Sin Cara coming in?
Yeah, I thought the whole Sin Cara thing just didn't work for me, and I think one of the reasons, there's a couple reasons for me. One of the reasons is they never put him with the right guys. I mean, if they would have put him in there with me or you. But the other one is he did not know how to speak English. And that is something you cannot do when you come to another company or another country. And, you know, he was a huge star in Mexico with a real freeform style. But he didn't have the option or the luxury that you and I did to go to ECW and go to WCW and learn kind of how to tone it down. He came in right away and got told, you can't do this, this, and this. And plus, he couldn't speak English. And I think that was the end of it for him, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think?
I agree. It was definitely a barrier for him. I think first off, you know, especially at this point in life, if you're coming to another country, you got to make sure you at least can understand or speak a bit of the language, you know.
Absolutely.
In order to get yourself around, and especially if it has to do with your work and you have to communicate with other workers, then you got to make sure you speak it.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And I know, when I went to Mexico, I learned how to speak Spanish, man. It's the way it was. You know, if I didn't, I wouldn't have gotten along. And I just, the longer he was there and the less he didn't learn how to speak English, the less respect I had for him. You know, I don't wish him ill will, but I was like, dude, you're throwing it away. You're not going to get it. You know, you're not going
to
get it.
Human being. Yeah, you're right. He was losing his opportunity become a real big superstar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think one of the reasons they brought him in was to be kind of another Rey Mysterio, but there'll never be another Rey Mysterio. You can't replace the type of talent or the type of character that you are, Oscar. And I appreciate having you on this show. It's been great to get a chance to sit down and talk to you after all these years, man. And you're one of my favorite people I've ever met in this business, and I'm really proud of everything you've ever accomplished, man.
Thank you, Chris. And likewise, man, you know, really good reminiscing, man, about everything in life, man.
Yeah.
It was really good. And again, with me, it was always a pleasure being in the ring with you, man, and being able to just demonstrate our skills to the world.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And I appreciate it, dude. I love you, bro, and hopefully I'll get a chance to see you soon.
Thank you, Chris. I love you too, man, and hopefully we can catch up soon, not over the phone, but... in real life, man.
Face to face.
Wee-wee-to.
Wee-wee-to and Güero. I'm Güero and you're Wee-wee-to.
Güero!
Talk to you soon, Oscar. Thanks, man.
All right, man. Take care.
I know that buying a car can be a hassle, and dealing with car salesmen and dealers is never easy. But believe me when I tell you, there's a better way, people! A buddy of mine told me about a new way to buy a car. It's called TrueCar.com. Yes, at TrueCar.com, you can actually see what others paid for the car you're looking for in your area, so you know when you're getting a great price. At TrueCar.com, you get a savings certificate, and you just take your savings certificate to a TrueCar certified dealer, so you don't need to worry about the hassle and anxiety of the old way to buy a car. And TrueCar users save an average of $3,000 off MSRP. $3,000. That's a lot of scratch. And check this out. TrueCar certified dealers have sold over 1 million cars to TrueCar users. Over 40,000 last month alone. The numbers don't lie. So, seriously, if you're ready to buy a car, Why wouldn't you go to TrueCar.com, huh? It's the negotiation-free, guaranteed savings way to buy a car. Save time, save money, and never, ever overpay again. Visit TrueCar.com today.
All right, it's time to go to the phones. We got a lot to talk about. We got some time, too. WrestleMania was this past weekend, and what a show it was. Some great matches, some shocking matches, kind of a changing of the guard. What are your thoughts? I put the number up on the Twitter, at I Am Jericho. I switched it up today. But you should also check at Talk Is Jericho. If you're following me at I Am Jericho, then you should follow me at Talk Is Jericho, too. It's only fair. All right, let's go to RJ in Connecticut. You're kicking off the discussion today, RJ. How you doing?
Not too bad, Chris. How about yourself?
I am doing great, man. Did you watch WrestleMania?
Oh, I did, and boy, was I shocked.
Shocked. And let me ask you this. Did you watch it on pay-per-view, or did you buy the network?
I bought the network, yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's so worth it. I don't know how anyone wouldn't at this point, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So you were shocked. What were you shocked about?
Well, definitely the streak ending was a shocker, but that's not really what I wanted to talk to you about today.
Okay, what's up?
I wanted to know your thoughts on if you think this Daniel Bryan thing's actually going to keep going. I know the fandangoing was a fad, and, you know, people come and go in the business all the time. I was just curious what your thoughts on the longevity of Daniel Bryan's going to be.
Well, I mean, the first thing of all is, I mean, Daniel Bryan, he's a great performer. He's a great wrestler. And he came up organically in that people got behind him, I think, for the last couple of years, ever since he lost WrestleMania 28 in 18 seconds. And that's kind of when the whole backlash started against people who were opposing Daniel Bryan. Now, having said that, it's very easy to chant yes. It's fun to chant yes. And I learned a long time ago, just because people are chanting your name doesn't mean you're over. So right. Let's see. I mean, the one thing the WWE has not done, I mean, let's be honest, they fought the Daniel Bryan movement the whole time.
Oh, of course.
But now they're, I don't know if it's giving in, but now they're saying, look, we appreciate it. We will give the people what they want. But let's see how it transfers to buy rates, how it transfers to ratings. Mm-hmm. Is this just a fun thing because we like to say yes and it's an easy thing to do and anybody can do it, anybody can say it? Or is this a legitimate money-making character? Now we'll find out. But the thing more importantly than ever, and I've sniffed this out about 6 months ago, is you're talking about the face of the company, which was always, I mean, the four of them was The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan, John Cena. Mm-hmm. They're not looking for someone to replace John Cena because they don't have to anymore. You don't need a face of the company anymore. You just need the WWE name. And that's the product that they're selling because they have the network, which if you buy it for $9.99 a month, it doesn't matter what the pay-per-view main events are. You're going to be watching it anyways. You've already bought it.
That's true.
You know, right. So I think they'll give Daniel Bryan a try. But now what constitutes a draw in this day and age, it doesn't really matter. They still have two shows a week. They can put Cena on one show. They can put Daniel Bryan on the other as far as the live events goes. And just go from there. But the point of, you know, who's leading the company, it doesn't matter. Now they're going more back to having, you know, 6 or 12 strong names, and the company name is what carries it the most. So,
and I honestly, at this point, I prefer that. I mean, I'm, you know, you can only see so much John Cena, you know, every segment, the same old guys. I'm not as big a Daniel Bryan fan as everybody else, but it's just good to see the fresh face in there.
It's very good to see the fresh face, and the people demanded it, and now it's time to see how it transfers. But I don't think it's just a fad. I think chanting yes might be a little bit of a fad, but I think the organic way that Daniel Bryan rose up from the ground and kind of beat the man by his merits and by his own talent is something that will stick for a long time. Let's move on over to Shams in Dallas, Texas. What's going on down in Texas, man? How you doing?
Nothing much, actually. I skipped out of work so I could work from home in the afternoon.
Smart.
Yeah, and I saw, I follow you at Talk Is Jericho and on I Am Jericho, and I saw the number and just, like, I had to immediately grab.
Nice. Thank you.
I've had the pleasure of meeting you twice, by the way. Once at Good Records in Dallas, and then when you came to Autorama about a month or two ago.
Oh, cool. Was I a nice guy?
Yes, you were. Both times.
Nice to hear. What's your comment about WrestleMania?
Okay, I gotta tell you, I love wrestling. I'm 29. I've been watching for at least like 25 years. you know, going back to watching with my grandfather, you know, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I'm not one of those, I guess, smart marks people who crap all over wrestling. If it's, oh, my God, it's the WWE, it's not Japan, and it's not the Indies, so it's, you know, it has to be terrible. I can tell you, honestly, I came into WrestleMania thinking that it wasn't going to be that great.
Yeah, on paper, and the build-up was kind of was not so-so, but it was okay. So
yeah.
So when you watched the show, what did you think?
I think, honestly, this year's WrestleMania was probably one of the best I've seen in the last 10 years.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, especially, like, I had a lot of critiques about it. Again, like I said, I love the WWE. I legitimately do. But, like the Taker-Lesnar build-up, like I said, like you said, on paper was really poor, in my opinion. And I think part of the shock came from Lesnar beating The Undertaker was the fact that until last Monday, The Undertaker had gotten the upper hand on Lesnar the entire time and hadn't really built, kind of like using the Daniel Bryan thing as an example. They didn't make Lesnar a quote-unquote credible threat to beating the streak.
Yeah.
Like CM Punk and, you know, Shawn Michaels and Triple H were, you know, in years past. So I think that's part of the reason why. I'm not saying that beating the streak wasn't a shock in and of itself, but that's what made it more shocking.
Well, I mean, I think, like I said, I mean, I think people were so conditioned that the fact that Undertaker would just win no matter what, and it just kind of was a average, you know, just an average thing, like a guaranteed thing. So it made it not as exciting, the match. I think no one expected him to lose. And when he finally lost, people were legitimately shocked. But meanwhile, that's the best finish that could have been. I think it was a great idea to have Taker lose. I was shocked as well. I never would have called it in a million years. Never would have guessed it in a million years. But in retrospect, it was the best way to do it. It was the right guy to have beat Taker. The fact that it was Brock Lesnar, who has legitimate credibility. He's a beast. And obviously, they have big plans for him. And like I said earlier in the show, I never like it when guys retire with a win. And if Undertaker is getting ready to leave, or maybe he only wants to work once in a while now without the pressure of that streak, but it was time to have somebody beat him. I'm not even talking about passing the torch. Well, it should have been a young guy. No, it shouldn't have. It's the same way as when Edge went down when we were tag team champions. I chose Big Show to be my success, to be his successor. And they're like, well, it could be a new guy that you make an instant star of. It's like, no, when you have a certain level of notoriety, you can only bring somebody up so far without it being kind of
hokey,
exactly, yeah. Without it being unbelievable. So I think that Brock is the best guy to do it, and I think it was a great move for the company. I think it was a great move, obviously, for Brock Lesnar and also for Undertaker. A lot of respect to him, and the fact he was knocked out during the match and continued going forward was something very, very impressive. But once again, like I said, he's the guy that was burned and still wrestled a whole Elimination Chamber match with me after being basically caught on fire by his own pyro. So Undertaker is the man. Much respect to him, and I'm really actually think it's a great move that Brock Lesnar beat him for the streak. Let's go over to Tony in D.C. How you doing, Tony?
Hey, it's great to talk to you. Big fan.
Hey, man, appreciate that. What did you think of WrestleMania? What are your comments?
Overall, I thought it was a really good one. The highlight of the weekend was Ultimate Warrior's speech, but I really found Cesaro winning the Battle Royale to be a very interesting choice.
Why do you say interesting?
His charisma and his mic abilities are getting pretty good, but he's been in this weird race card thing for God knows how long now with the Real Americans, and it's nice to see him recognized for actual wrestling abilities with that gimmick just off the table, because I've never really liked him so much, but I've grown to have respect for his abilities in the ring, and it's nice to see him get recognized for that without swagger and without Zeb and just like actually as a wrestler instead of so much of a character.
Well, I mean, like I said early in the show, I predicted from the start that he was going to be something. I asked to work with him in Tokyo last year specifically because we were doing a Japanese tour, and I was like, I want to work with Cesaro because I know we could tear the house down. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, I went back and reported to Vince and Triple H that he was the man. And, you know, it took a while. I mean, Vince saw him as kind of boring at the start, of having no personality, which is why he had him yodeling on the way to the ring, which is why he put him with Coulter in the first place. You know, at least getting the race heat is better than no heat. But I knew, much like Daniel Bryan, much like myself, much like Eddie Guerrero, when you first come into the company, it takes a while to kind of figure out your character, to figure out your place. And once you do, once you get that confidence, you start blowing people away. And Cesaro, I think, was a great choice for that winner of the Battle Royal. And once again, kind of changing of the guard. You saw that at WrestleMania. You saw that in the Raw afterwards. And it's a whole new landscape for the WWE at this point in time. So it's it was really special to see that Cesaro won, because I think he deserves it. And definitely he's got a huge future for upcoming. And, you know, like I said, I'm the Nostradamus of wrestling talent, and I knew it from the start. All right, let's do one more. We'll go to Brandon in Detroit. What do you think, Brandon?
Thanks, Chris. I'm a big fan of your show. Talk is Jericho.
Thank you.
I want to talk about the streak, and I know it's a big shocking that Brock Lesnar won. So I want to hear your thoughts about the streak.
Well, like I said, I think Brock was the right guy to beat the streak, and I was shocked as well. I never would have called it, never would have expected it, but I'm actually glad that it happened. I think it was the right move. I think that if Taker would have retired at 22-0 or 23-0, it would have been a big loss of a chance for somebody to get those bragging rights and be able to run with it. And I think Brock is the right guy for it, as far as credentials, as far as believability. And also to heat him up, because, you know, WWE is paying Brock a lot of money, and nobody expected Brock to win. And a couple of years ago, that wouldn't have been the case. So he needed a shot in the arm if they're going to use him to draw money in the future. And he got that shot in the arm on Sunday. What did you think?
I think it was a great call for Brock Lesnar to get the win. I also thought that either Brock, Triple H, or you would be the one to end the Undertaker streak. And I know you heard this. There was a lot of controversy about how he changed the script, and they said that he was fired on the spot.
No, there was no change of the script. That was the finish the whole way, shape, or through. There was no changing of the script. Undertaker got knocked out for real. He went to the hospital for real afterwards, but that was the plan the whole time. There was no changing of the script on the fly. That is a internet rumor.
Yeah, because I thought that too, because yesterday I put it on Facebook that said either Undertaker can finish or that he wanted that dramatic moment for the fans to sink in.
Yeah, no, that was exactly. I mean, I think also too, the bottom line was that Undertaker was legitimately knocked silly. He was legitimately on Dream Street, and that's why it took him a while to get up. He did not know where he was. He didn't know he was in New Orleans. He didn't know he was at WrestleMania. He really got his bell rung bad, but once again, he finished the match anyways, and it went exactly the way that they had planned it. All right, let's head over to Reggie in Oregon. How you doing, Reg?
Hello. Hello, Chris. How you doing?
Good. I got the Canadian pronunciation. I always say Oregon. It's Oregon, right?
You know what? Actually, I'm from Chicago. I'm from Chicago, so I really don't know the correct pronunciation, but I say Oregon.
Okay, so you and me are together, Oregon. What's your thoughts, man?
You know what, man? Honestly, at first I was kind of shocked by it, but in thinking about it, I mean, it's WrestleMania 30. It's a milestone. And especially when it comes to the WWE and booking and Vince McMahon, everybody knows that if you're a big wrestling fan, that Vince likes to do something big. And The Undertaker is a locker room general, from what I understand. I only have the outside perspective, but that's what I've heard, in that he wouldn't agree to do something if it wasn't best for the company and if it was something that people would remember. And the fact that it was so unexpected is the reason why I think that it affected so many people. You know, that's my thoughts on it.
Well, I agree with you on that. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, when I was 17 years old and Hulk Hogan lost the title to Andre the Giant due to the evil referee twin, I couldn't believe it, because Hogan had been the champion for 4 years, and I just couldn't envision a world without Hulk Hogan as the champion. And I think that's kind of the same vibe. It's something I never would have predicted. I never wanted it to happen. But once it happens, you realize it was a pretty cool moment. So I think that Taker losing and the streak ending was something that was destined to happen, and it should have happened. And I think the fact that Brock got it, you know, like I said, he's a beast, and it's very believable that he has it. So if anybody was going to take it, I know some people are saying, well, it should be Roman Reigns, or it should be this guy or that guy. Brock is the guy to me that's the most believable and the guy that you can do the most with it from a business standpoint at this point in time. All right, let's take one more call from Matt in Louisiana. What's going on, Matt? How you doing, man?
YTJ, how are you today, man?
I'm doing good. What's going on?
You're going to have to excuse me if I'm a little hoarse, man. We kind of screamed our lungs out this weekend at WrestleMania weekend. So
that's great, man. So you went to the
I'm
show?
Still recovering.
Did you have a good time?
Yeah, we had a blast, man.
Good, good.
Such a good time.
That's cool. What's going on?
I want to comment. I know every year we kind of get into this mindset of, man, you know, when are the new stars going to show up, and when are they going to go with these new guys, and this year just felt like it was so fresh above all the past, probably the past five WrestleManias. All the new guys that they put, Wyatt looked awesome. His entrance was so good. Cesaro, Bryan, all these guys, it just feels like such a fresh new WWE. Such a good time to be a fan, man.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think, you know, Mania was really exciting, but I also think the Raw afterwards was great with Paige winning and the, you know, Bo Dallas is coming and Adam Rose and Rusev, and it was kind of the coming out for Cesaro and Wyatt, obviously Daniel Bryan, The Shield. I mean, there's a real cool vibe happening with all these, you know, new faces and fresh faces. And that's what the WWE and wrestling is built on, is having new talent. And that always what keeps it fresh. And right now, the WWE is like a great football team or a great hockey team. They have amazing rookies that are coming up, great draft choices that they found on their own. They've traded for some good guys. You got guys in the prime of their career, and you got some great veterans as well to help round it all out. So it's a very strong squad, but it's very exciting to see all of the new kids that are out there, all the new faces. I mean, some of them aren't really kids. A lot of them have been wrestling for 10, 15 years already. I know Cesaro has, and the Shield guys have, but it's everything kind of coming together all at once. And it's a distinct moment where they're saying this is a whole new guard and a whole new group of people. So whether you like him or whether you don't like him, it's the way that the company is going, and this is the wave of the future. So for all the people that have been complaining for years that it's been the same old, the time is come. You know, as a wise man once said, enough is enough, and it's time for a change.
You are so right on that, man.
And that change is coming. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate your call. I'm glad you had a good time in Louisiana. And I thank all of you guys for calling in and giving me your thoughts, and keep that in mind. You always be watching at I Am Jericho or at Talk Is Jericho on the Twitter, and maybe you will get a chance to call in next time as well. Thank you so much. Hey, thanks so much for linking to Amazon through the Talk Is Jericho page at podcast1.com. Whenever you do your online shopping, I just used it yesterday. I clicked on Talk Is Jericho on the Amazon banner. It took me straight to Amazon. I bought a bunch of stuff. Every time you buy something like that, Amazon kicks back a few dollars to the show so I can keep bringing you the Pod of Thunder twice a week for free. Remember, this is free. All you got to do is sit there and listen. So when you go buy something at Amazon, do it through podcast1.com, the Talk Is Jericho page. It's another great way to support our show. And when I say our show, that means me and you. This is our show. You don't need to buy anything specifically. It's just if you're going to be shopping on Amazon anyway, link to it through my page, and Amazon will show us a little love. It's helping to pay studio costs, electricity, cleaning staff, for my personal butler, for my personal chef, for my personal cowbell cleaner. You know what I'm saying? Any costs that we have, you are helping me to pay those. It doesn't cost you anything extra to go to Amazon through the Talk Is Jericho page. No hidden fees or charges. You still get the same great Amazon prices, the same great Amazon service. You're just helping out the show in the process. You're just a click away. You're just a click away. So go to podcast1.com, click on Talk Is Jericho, then click on the Amazon link. And if you find something cool on Amazon that you think I should know about, hit me on the Twitter at Talk Is Jericho. Let me know when you go on Amazon and buy something or find something cool. I want to hear it. So thanks for hitting that download button as well. In fact, if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend to check out the show. And tell them to tell a couple of friends, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. You could even hit that subscribe button at iTunes so you never miss an episode, okay? It goes right to your device on time, It's trick to rock around, That's right on top. It's tricky. Boom, bump. It's tricky. Boom, bump. It makes it to you on time. And that ain't tricky. See you on Friday. I got Megadeth frontman Dave Mustaine. Talk about a heavy metal legend. He will be here to talk all about Megadeth, all about his upcoming gig with the San Diego Symphony, all about Cliff Burton. So much cool stuff to talk about. So come back and hang out with us this Friday. Stay hungry, stay hard, stay cool, stay heavy. Peace, hugs, and love. We'll see you on Friday. Yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.